At least 207 people have been killed and many others injured after a series of blasts at churches and hotels in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday, bringing an end to the lull in major attacks since the end of the civil war 10 years ago. The explosions, some of which officials say were suicide bombs, led to an immediate clampdown. The government quickly declared a curfew and blocked access to most major social media and messaging sites.
With billions of dollars on the line, Apple and chip supplier Qualcomm backed down from a major legal showdown just as their lawyers were squaring off in court. Lawyers for Apple had accused Qualcomm of using, quote, monopoly power to set, quote, unfair prices, and engaging in illegal patent licensing practices. The claim involves chips that allow devices like the iPhone or Apple Watch to connect to wireless data networks.
This week, Beyoncé stunned fans with the drop of her Netflix special Homecoming. And it appears there's more to come. According to Variety, Beyoncé struck a $60 million deal with Netflix for three exclusive specials, including Homecoming. The documentary chronicles the Grammy-winning performer's 2018 Coachella performance, in which she became the first black woman to headline the festival.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's April 22nd, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business week and business day getting underway. Lots going on in the world of business this morning. We're going to get to as much of it as we can this morning. The latest headlines coming up. We'll do the markets as well. On the program today, in our CEO spotlight, Mark Kaufman is here, the founder and CEO of Athletico Physical Therapy. Physical therapy has become big business, and Athletico, which is based in the suburbs, is expanding and taking advantage of that new market, that new niche that's opening up. And Mark will be in our first segment this morning. A little bit later on this morning, we're going to talk about Earth Day. Jake Barnett, financial advisor and institutional consultant at Greystone Consulting, will be here with us to talk about sustainable investing on Earth Day. And that'll be at about 5:38 this morning. We'll get to the latest news, traffic, weather, and sports as well as we move through the hour. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings today on Wall Street as the markets get back to work after a long weekend. There was no trading on Good Friday, but on Thursday, stocks were up as investors reacted to some positive financial news. And you'll remember that retail sales posted their biggest gains since late September. This morning, though, futures are negative as we head to the opening bell. Dow futures down nearly a quarter of a percent, 70 points this morning. S&P futures are lower by about a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures down nearly 25 points, a third of a percent as we, again, move to 8:30 Chicago time this morning. Around the globe, markets in Europe are generally mixed, with the London markets lower. Everything else is higher. Asian markets this morning mixed as well on the first trading day back after a holiday. A number of places in the world having an Easter Monday holiday today. For instance, Italy, France, Hong Kong, and Germany, Australia all having Easter Monday holidays today in trading. And oil, by the way, we should mention, is trading up at nearly 2%. $65.49 a barrel, up $1.49. That's one of our headlines this morning. Oil prices up nearly 2.5% as the U.S. gets ready to announce the end of sanctions waivers for oil from Iran. International benchmark crude oil at $80 a barrel, up nearly $1.80 a barrel at $73.77. West Texas Intermediate crude up $1.56, $65.63. Prices haven't been this high in nearly 6 months. Trump administration expected to announce today that all nations must stop buying oil from Iran or be subject to sanctions. Boeing's rejecting allegations that shoddy production is potentially threatening the safety of the company's 787 Dreamliner. The accusations printed yesterday in the New York Times, which reported the aircraft maker had ignored and retaliated against employees who complained about safety oversights and sites in an effort to produce planes as fast as possible at its South Carolina factory. Boeing, which is already dealing with investigations into its 737 MAX following two fatal crashes in 5 months, said the Times had distorted information and was rehashing old stories that had been put to rest. And a study that's being released today claims President Trump's decision to impose tariffs on imported washing machines did lead to 800 new manufacturing jobs in the U.S., but at a really high price. The New York Times reports economists at the University of Chicago and the Federal Reserve found that consumers paid between 125 to 225% of the cost of the washing machine tariffs. The researchers say the tariffs brought $82 million into the U.S. Treasury, but consumer prices rose by $1.5 billion. That's a price of $817,000 per U.S. job created. Front and center this morning in our CEO spotlight, the U.S. healthcare system spends $190 billion every year on physical therapies for back pain, neck pain, knee pain, and other ailments. It's a strong market for companies like Oak Brook-based Athletico Physical Therapy. And CEO Mark Kaufman in our spotlight today, founder and CEO of Athletico Physical Therapy. Mark, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
It's great to be here with you, Steve.
I'm excited to have our conversation today because I think consumers look around and they see Athletico seemingly everywhere. You've sort of had an explosion of growth recently, haven't you?
Well, we had an organic growth period from when we started in 91, and that lasted till about 2014. But then we did an acquisition of a company called Accelerated. And we went from, within 4 years, 5 years now, we went from 90 sites to almost 470.
Wow. So that explains why we're seeing more of it.
Yes.
There's also sort of a revitalization, and maybe revitalization is the wrong word, but the way people come to your business is different now because you can just come in right off the street.
That's correct. What we always used to be able to do, we did what we called assessments or screenings, free assessments. If someone, you know, you knew somebody that was having a problem, you could send them to our office. We could evaluate them. Then what we'd do is typically tell them what they could do on their own or refer them to a physician. Now they can skip that step, essentially. They can come directly off the street. We can evaluate them. We still may send them to a physician. We may send them to an emergency room. We may send them home. But if we believe they're a candidate for physical therapy, we can start them that day and take them through a course of therapy. And that's new in the state of Illinois with the new legislation that came through in August of last year.
I want to get into more of why people are seeking out physical therapy these days, but I want to talk more about you because this is a CEO spotlight. What is it in your career that's kind of prepared you for this moment, and what kind of challenges do you face on a day-in, day-out basis?
I think I'm not sure what I went to school for, and everything that I did in preparation for my career prepared me for this moment. I went to school to be an athletic trainer and a physical therapist. Ultimately, I thought I was going to work with collegiate athletes. And then for a lot of reasons, I started this business, Athletico, in 91 as an outpatient physical therapy company that combined those services. And every day is a new day for this business. It's a new learning curve for me. I've grown as a physical therapist and an athletic trainer, but I've grown even more, and I've had to because all the business skills, all the management training, all the management skills, I've had to kind of learn on my own. And so that's taken place the last 28 years.
Is it a requirement? Do you think that a physical therapist is the CEO? Do you think you could be the CEO without having all of that knowledge?
You know, I think there has to be, that's a great question, there has to be leaders within the company in the senior suite that are clinicians, because you have to be able to understand this is a customer service industry, it's a hospitality industry to a certain degree. You certainly have to have a perspective or be able to put yourself in the perspective of the patient or the referring physician or the athlete coming off the field or the injured worker. And not having that clinical experience would be hard. From the business perspective, I do believe that a non-clinician could lead the business, but they would have to have clinical clinician support.
And let's talk more about the business model here. You talked a little bit about the physician referral part of this. We've already mentioned that the people can come in off the street now and see a physical therapist. What is the business model for that? Is it largely from insurance is where the money comes from, or is it people from out of pocket? Is it inexpensive enough that people can afford it out of pocket if they need it?
We have the answer is yes, and the most of our reimbursement comes from insurance companies. We're, whatever, a majority of our business comes from normal commercial payers, your Blue Cross, United Health, Cigna, Aetna, of that type. There's another percentage of our business comes from workmen's injuries, workers' comp, and then there's a percentage of our business that comes from Medicare, and finally the cash-based business. And cash-based is smaller but growing because, we citizens are being held more accountable for our deductibles, and deductibles are larger, so it becomes a larger percentage of the overall reimbursement, and that's something we've had to adjust to over time. We do offer cash-based services for those without insurance or prefer not to use it if they want to come in off the street, and there's different rates for that. But the vast majority comes from third-party payers.
What are the problems, for lack of a better word, that people come in with that you see the most of?
By diagnosis, we'd have to get into the details on that, but overall spine, followed closely probably by knee and hip. So spine, I throw everything in, spine meaning lower back or neck. But, there's high percentage of people, everyone experiences back pain or some type of back pain in their lives. So that's the largest diagnosis bucket that we have. And then you get into the extremities with knee and hip, shoulder, and it falls down to elbow, ankle, and but that's mainly what Athletico treats. We treat predominantly orthopedic injuries, but we have 30 other service lines that weren't with me when I started in 91.
Yeah, and some of the things that have kind of doing a little research on it, that people, more modern issues, people playing video games coming to see you. They have all kinds of problems, I guess, with their hands and with sitting.
Yeah, chronic. I mean, when you're playing these, that generation's well beyond me. But, it's usually overuse injuries, hand and wrist. We have a great group of about 100, 150 hand specialists. Often they're occupational therapists. Mm-hmm. They can be physical therapists, too. But they got to go through the hand specialist training, and that's usually hand, wrist, tendonitis, overuse, things like that. Carpal tunnel.
We've also do a lot of coverage of people with chronic pain. Mm-hmm. The opioid crisis is a big deal. Is this something that people with chronic pain think of, or do you have to kind of remind them that, hey, maybe opioids are not the root, maybe you could come see a physical therapist?
I'm glad you brought that up. Your audience might not think of physical therapy when they're in chronic pain or know someone that's in chronic pain, and certainly the opioid crisis has put a spotlight on that, because physical and recognize you're hearing it from a physical therapist, that I believe getting patients that have any type of orthopedic pain, back pain, joint pain, knee pain, ankle, shoulder, neck, getting them into the hands of a physical therapist for a short course of physical therapy to see if we can offer benefit. We can't help everyone, but there's a large majority of people that we can help that we would save, bend the cost curve by saving them the downstream revenue of all the, opioid prescriptions, all the imaging, such as MRIs, x-rays, physician calls, emergency room visits. If they would take those people and refer, just say all spine patients, all back pain patients, go see a physical therapist for 6 visits. If they can't get you better, then we'll start the other courses of care. And I really think that would not only bend the cost curve, but it offered a great benefit. And with the opioid crisis, it's getting more of a spotlight that it deserves now.
For somebody who's never been to physical therapy, give us a sense of, let's say, we're talking about back pain.
Okay.
What is a visit like?
So you come in, you might fill out your administrative stuff online, or you can come in, you schedule an appointment. The first visit's usually an hour. Traditionally, our patients are seen for longer than that. We don't, bucket the care in a way that it's restrictive to the physical therapist or the patient. They get what they need. So they come in, schedule for an hour an appointment. That's the initial evaluation. You get a full assessment of the condition, for this case, your spine. But they look at joints above and below the injury, and they'll determine the course of care from that visit, which could include some modalities, but usually includes a lot of hands-on care, a lot of therapeutic exercises designed for you to help you recover. It might start slow, depending on your level of pain or what condition you're in or the injury itself. And then you're set up for visits 2-3 times a week, or whatever the therapist and patient agree on should be the plan of care, and that could take anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks. The average patient probably sees this 9 to 10 visits, but sometimes it's longer than that if you've had surgery, and sometimes it's shorter than that.
I know people with back pain, with really bad back pain, sometimes end up in the operating room. A lot of times, I guess, do. There are ways that you might be able to prevent that, though, right?
If we can get them early, we can. I'm not saying every patient by any stretch, but if we get our hands on these people earlier, we can have an impact on the diagnosis or the condition. And I believe there's a lot of cases that we can help them stay out of the emergency room, let alone some of the other treatments of choice. But spine's a good example of that. Everyone experiences it. There's a lot of options for spine care. I think physical therapist is underutilized. Again, you're hearing it from a PT, but we can impact those patients.
Let's talk about the workforce. You have about, 4,500 employees, maybe a little bit more than that?
Yeah, it's not a number I reflect on regularly.
Yeah.
But because we've grown so much. But we have a great group of people. We have it's made up of approximately 1,600 physical therapists or physical therapist assistants or hand therapists that I mentioned. We also have 400 to 500 athletic trainers that are out in the field covering games, working with teams of all levels. And then, of course, the support staff, administrative staff, as important as any group in our company. And then the people at the resource center, the people that oversee the business, including myself.
Because of your PT experience, is it easier for you to be the CEO of some of these folks?
I think I can. Yes, I believe the answer is yes, that I can understand anything we're doing wrong. And wrong looks like when I or we at the Resource Center are doing things that distract our clinicians. If we're, regulatory requirements, not preparing them well, onboarding them well, we're taking them away from their patients or what they're trained to do and what they do best. And we got to get out of the way of them, giving them more time with their patients, giving them more time for hands-on care is what we're all about. And when we're doing our jobs well, when I'm doing my job well, I'm doing a better job of not distracting our clinicians, supporting them. I'm a servant-faced leader. I want to serve our team, and I feel good when I'm doing that, and I certainly don't feel good when I'm not.
Yeah. Is it seeing a lot of these locations? Do you like to be hands-on where you're among the workers?
That's funny you mention it, because I just came from Oak Park. My first meeting this morning was in Oak Park, and I saw a facility that the Oak Park South, we have two in Oak Park, and I hadn't been to it, the River Forest facility right next door to Oak Park. And I hadn't been to the facility, so after my meeting, and still wanted to make it down here, I stopped by and got to meet the whole team. I'd met the manager before, but I hadn't met her team. I met about 12 folks, had a nice group of clinics, had a couple interactions with the patients, and I'll admit it's an energy gainer for me, because I miss those days when I was a clinician.
How big of a part of the business model is having active role in the community? I know that Athletico is very visible at charity events, especially ones where you have athletics happening. How big of a deal is that to you as a CEO?
It's a huge deal to me, and I think I'm doing a better job of supporting the team in that way, because I saw in myself when the early first 10 years of Athletico, I'll use Big Brothers Big Sisters of Metropolitan of Chicago as an example. I've been on the board since 2003 or 4. I was board chair for two terms, but I was asked to be on the board in the late 90s, and I declined because I was building the business, I was working all the time. I realized about 4 years later when they asked me again, I was still building the business and working all the time, and I just felt like I need to take this step, but I waited, and I shouldn't have. And I've shared that story with our team to get involved early. It doesn't have to be money. It can be time. Nothing more valuable than your time. And I've encouraged the team to, find out what gives them passion, gives them energy, what they want to get involved with. And there's so many opportunities in a city, great city like Chicago, to do that. And I latched on to Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and it's been great for me. But, the investment you make in that comes back, many times over. And we encourage our team to get involved. I think we all do it at different levels, and it's something I'm really proud of.
It's also something, too, that consumers, especially younger consumers, the millennial group, like to see that involvement. To build loyalty, they like to see who they're giving their business to giving back.
Yes, it's one aspect of what I call a differentiated customer. I think in the old days, patients would listen to their doctor, they'd come into Athletico, they'd receive their course of care, but now people, they're on the internet, they're talking to their friends, they have higher expectations for their service, the quality, the hospitality, the things you mentioned, the extraneous factors like charitable involvement. And rightfully so, it raises the bar, and that challenges us to keep delivering what we do better, and that makes the job fun.
So what does growth look like for Athletico now that you've got all of these stores and you've taken on more of them? Is that it, expanding with more stores, expanding services even further?
We're looking for new markets. We have probably 40 to 50% of our business is in Illinois right now. Mm-hmm. You know, 2014, it was 95%. So now we're in 12 states with the 470 locations. We're looking at other markets we want to get into. We typically go into a market like Kansas City. We went into because we had two managers here in Chicago that were relocating to be with family in Kansas City. Now we have six stores there. That's not typical for us, but it's an example. Typical is we find a partner that does things the right way, does it like in similar form to Athletico, somebody we think we can work with and grow with. They want to grow in their market. There's the opportunity for growth. And so we acquire groups like this in different markets. We've done that numerous times over. You know, Lincoln, Omaha is a recent example. Great partner, Mike Berlin and his team there. We started with, I think, 14 locations. We've expanded into Lincoln now with two other locations. So that's how we look to grow. We'll do it through de novos or new stores, but we often do it through mergers and acquisitions, like I shared.
One of the trends in healthcare is telemedicine. I think it was a 300 or 400% increase in doctors using telemedicine in some form or fashion to treat patients. How is that going to impact the physical therapy world?
We're playing with that now. We have a pilot we're doing with our athletic training force, so a patient can log on our website or call in and schedule a telehealth visit or email, text, whatever it takes to get on the schedule and go through an assessment by an athletic trainer. It's complimentary. We're, I guess, dipping our toe in the waters and understanding how and what we can do there. Physical therapy is entering that market, too. We'll be sure to do that. I think there's never any substitute for a physical therapist in a facility getting their hands on the patient. But access is so important right now that we have to find new ways to connect to people and where they may not need a physical therapist. They may not need a course of care. They may not need hands-on care, but they can simply be explained, here's what you got. Here's some things you can do about it. And if you don't get it better, hey, we can take another step. But let's use telehealth as a tool. And I'm excited about it because the whole game is about access right now, or part of the game. A big part of the game is around access. People want healthcare on their terms, and sometimes that's not waiting and going, seeing a physician and scheduling an appointment a month from now. It's, I want it today. I want it this afternoon. I want somebody to tell me what I have, and telehealth provides that.
Yeah, and especially in, I know we take for granted living in a city that some of these services are within maybe walking distance of our home, but in rural areas of the state where they rarely have access to doctors, let alone physical therapy, it's a bigger deal, isn't it?
It's a great example because we see, you know, I can find out the data on how many physical therapists are in each county in Illinois, and there's some that it's stark, you know, there's not too many. And and so we obviously avoid opening facilities in those markets, but you're right, you hit on it, that the opportunity for someone to connect to a physical therapist isn't always easy, and telehealth provides that opportunity.
I know sometimes this isn't a fair question, and it requires you to have a crystal ball of sorts, but where would you like to see Athletico in, let's say, 5 or 6 years?
Well, I'd love to see it in its similar form in the way that we deliver care, because it's a company I still recognize from when I opened about a mile and a half from here in 1991. But our plan is to almost double our size in the next 5 to 10 years. So we're talking 900, 800,000 facilities. I don't know how many states that will involve, but I know it will be more states than we're in right now. And we have some great opportunities with great partners to continue to grow the business. We can do that through the opening new stores and finding the right partners. But there's, you know, right now, if you added up the top 5 to 10 players in the country, including a company like Athletico, it makes up about 80% of the market. I'm sorry, it makes up 20% of the market share, leaving 80% of the market that could be added on. So there's a lot of opportunity for consolidation. And we just want to find the right partners in the right markets.
Yeah, that's a lot of runway. And when you think about all the people, additional people that need these services, seems like a winning strategy.
It's a growing market for physical therapy. People understand the benefits. Things like a longer lifespan, things like people having knees and hips done at a higher and higher rate, things like people not being satisfied with giving up a sport or activity, or want to return back to work, or want to return back to skiing at age 75. You know, people aren't going to give up on their activity levels, and physical therapy can help them.
Well, Mark, it's wonderful meeting you. All the best to everybody at Athletico, and come back and see you sometime.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
Mark Hoffman, founder and CEO of Athletico Physical Therapy from Oakbrook, based the company based in Oakbrook. We're going to continue our conversation with Mark after the bell this morning and post more of that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later on this morning at WGNradio.com. And make sure you visit Athletico online at athletico.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Monday edition of the opening bell. Earth Day 2019. We want to have a conversation this morning about socially sustainable investing. Lots of things happening today on Earth Day, but can we, with our investments, help drive some of that conversation? Joining us this morning in studio is Jake Burnett, financial advisor and institutional consultant at Greystone Consulting. Jake, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve.
And happy Earth Day to you.
Happy Earth Day to you.
We were just getting ready for the interview, having a conversation here in the studio about this, and the idea that as an investor, as a lowly investor, that perhaps I could have some impact about what is happening in the world with climate, with so many different socially or sustainable different movements, is exciting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's exciting to a number of people. What we've seen within the broader sustainable investing, responsible investing space, which from a definitional standpoint, I'll use the broad umbrella of intentionally aligning your investments with positive impact for people and planet. Since 2012, we've seen a 220% increase in the total dollars invested in that space, and now accounts for $1 in $4 professionally managed in the U.S. So it's really been an explosion in interest and momentum for the space.
And I want to get into some of the just sort of generally, well, we can do that now, generally, what would be some of the things that we could invest in, some of the different movements?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I talk about it, when our team talks about this with clients, we use a framework that Morgan Stanley developed that basically breaks the sustainable investing space into three different channels. And I want to be specific, there's also exciting ways to invest in things like women's empowerment, diversity, equity, and inclusion, affordable housing. I'm really going to focus on the climate sustainable piece as a personal passion point and also because of Earth Day. So when you look at that climate sustainable investing, the three channels that we break out are fossil fuel aware investing. And that's where investors are trying to lower or minimize their investments in coal, oil, and gas producing companies. There's the environmental leader space, and that's where you're really leaning into the companies that are exhibiting best practices when it comes to the environment in any industry group, including energy. And then finally, there's climate solutions investing, where you're investing specifically in those companies and industries that are contributing to a positive transition to a low-carbon economy.
84% of individual investors in a recent survey talked about how they're interested in doing this. Are they, though? I mean, what gets them off of the couch and actually into this space?
Yeah, I think that increasingly we are seeing the momentum as dictated by the earlier stat regarding the $1 in $4 professionally managed. You know, when it comes to the disconnect between $1 in $4 and 84%, I think it's a lack of education sometimes in the space in terms of helping people understand how easy and accessible this can be as a first step. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you're talking about the disruption that climate change could cause to our economy, investing in that context is a very complex topic. However, there are immediate first steps that people can take, whether that's incorporating a sustainable fund into your portfolio, having a conversation with your advisor, talking to whoever manages your 401k, that are immediate and accessible.
So let's talk about how this movement is perhaps going to come to bloom. People have always said it's going to be money that helps drive some of these changes. Are you seeing that, and are there the big players involved in this that would do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Increasingly, you're seeing from the most sophisticated and large investors in the world a real focus on this topic. Jeremy Grantham is a very successful investor who's oftentimes given a lot of credit in part for predicting the housing crisis before it happens. He now talks about climate risk as the largest underpriced risk in the financial markets today. When you zoom out a little bit, you see that there's a coalition called the Climate Action 100, now represents over $33 trillion in assets, so a huge portion of the financial markets, that is explicitly designed to engage those companies that are most responsible for carbon emissions to ask them, how are you transitioning to a low-carbon economy?
So let's kind of go through some of the nuts and bolts of this. What would be a good first step for investors who are listening to this conversation thinking, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that part of it is educating yourself. So whatever your interest area might be, there's lots of great articles. If you were to Google just something along the lines of climate sustainable investing, how do I do it? That could get you started. If you have a financial advisor, going and talking to that individual, if you haven't already, asking them questions about, how are we reflecting this value set within my own investment portfolio? I also encourage people to talk to their 401k provider. So if you're working for a company, if most of your investments are in your 401k, have a conversation with your HR administrator or whoever runs that portfolio. And then the final step I would advocate is if you work with a institution like a college or a church that has their own assets, have a frank conversation about whether those investments are aligned with the mission of the institution.
Does this involve rejiggering the whole portfolio? Do we have to sort of destroy it and start from the ground up, or can we do this piecemeal?
No, I think you can do it piecemeal. Obviously, if you hear this and you're suddenly on fire about it and want to, you know, start from the ground up, that's something that I would, you know, say is completely possible. However, there's also options where you could look in one specific asset class, let's say, a large one like U.S. large cap stocks, and say, I'm going to try a company that's leaning into that environmental leader space, that's leaning into the companies that are exhibiting best practices when it comes to environmental and social practices. Swap that out and, you know, do your homework. Make sure that you're, just as with any investing, looking at a fund that really exhibits strong financial characteristics. There are good options out there, though.
Do you have to have a do you have to be ready for risk here? Is this a more risky proposition than some other stocks?
I would not say a more risky proposition than some stocks. I think that increasingly, when you look at the quotes like Jeremy Grantham, who's speaking about this being the largest underpriced risk in the market, I think it's actually from some of those large-scale institutional investors being seen as a method of risk mitigation. They're saying, we're already seeing disruption in our portfolio due to sea level rise, due to, you know, more positive notes like the evolution of electric vehicles and the large-scale adoption of renewable energy with cost falling. How is our portfolio going to manage that risk that's caused by that transition, by that disruption?
Part of this process, I'm guessing, too, would require us to divest from some of these non-social stocks, right? What kind of a process is that, and how quickly does that have to happen?
So I would not say that that's a unequivocal option, although a lot of people are making a strong case for divestment, and I think there's a lot of validity to that argument. You can also engage in shareholder advocacy. It's probably a balance between the two. If you're looking at pure divestment from the standpoint of getting out of, in the environmental space, the focus is largely on fossil fuel companies. The process is, one, if you're invested in funds, there are more and more options available of funds that have, you know, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds that have divested from fossil fuel. If you have the option of picking individual stocks and that's how you build your portfolio, obviously you can take those companies out of how you're picking and sell those that are participating. If you're a little larger, there's actually options to put together indexes that take out fossil fuels and then reduce risk or tracking error to the larger market. So you're seeing more and more optionality available, more and more customization available, which we think is really important.
How much does politics play into this? Does a person's politics play into this? Are you more likely to see somebody who has the politics, who isn't completely sure that the climate has a problem, do this, or are they impacting the work that you're doing at all?
You know, I think what the point I always make there is to say that when you look at the BlackRocks of the world, for example, who are investing a huge amount in looking at companies that are looking at their portfolio and figuring out what the climate risk is, that's not a political decision for them. Mm-hmm. That's much more so a conversation that's driven by the hard facts and numbers of climate science at the base level and driven by what we're seeing today. So even if it is a political decision, I don't think it should be, because I think this is a reality that we're facing in the marketplace that investors are increasingly going to need to grapple with.
Something you said earlier, I want to go back to, and that is, you know, the people may be listening to this discussion thinking, okay, I've got to have a big portfolio to do this. I've got to have a lot of money. You mentioned 401k holders, mm-hmm. that's something that we, those of us who have 401ks, this is something we can do within those programs.
Yeah. If it is not a option in terms of a sustainable and environmentally responsible fund that's in your portfolio today, then I would say it should be to some extent in terms of going and having a conversation with your 401k provider. Oftentimes, in my experience, the conduit to that is human resources, mm-hmm. and talking to them about, you know, I would like an option. The more that they hear that from the participants in the plan, the more seriously they're going to take that request and go back and, you know, have that impact within the company, which could obviously, if you're a larger company, have pretty broad scale implications.
And one of the best and easiest ways to get going on this right away, if you want to feel motivated today, is give you a call, right?
So our team primarily works with nonprofit institutions, so foundations, endowments, hospital systems, religious orders. So we're working more so with those different institutions that are looking to align their investments with their values. I'd say, you know, call your local, there's also groups like USCIF, which is a large-scale advisor program, which helps find local advisors that have self-adopted to move into this space. Finally, I would just simply say that, have a conversation with your advisor, even if they haven't shown that they're passionate about this space. It's important that they hear this more and more from their clients. It's that client demand piece that's really going to help change the adoption mindset, help get the momentum going at more of a grassroots level.
It feels like there's a movement here, and it feels like it's positive.
I feel that way, too.
Jake, it's good meeting you. Thanks for coming in this morning. All the best to you and everybody at Greystone.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Steve.
Jake Barnett, financial advisor, institutional consultant, Greystone Consulting. You can find them online at morganstanley.com/Greystone.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street. Dow futures off about 51 points this morning. Nearly a quarter of a percent with S&P and NASDAQ futures as well. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we move back to a full five-day week of trading, we quickly review the market closes at the board and the Mercantile Exchange back on Thursday ahead of the three-day holiday weekend. At the end of the week, trading last week saw June lean hogs at $96.75 a hundredweight, a gain of 62 cents for the day on Thursday. June live cattle gained 27 cents to close at $122.67. April feeder cattle up 35 cents last Thursday, closing at $145.70 a hundredweight. Grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade, the July wheat contract down half a cent, 448 and a quarter is where that contract will start today. July corn unchanged at 367 and a quarter, and July soybeans gained 2 cents last Thursday to close at 894 and a quarter. In the livestock picture, some good news and some bad news. good news, except for those who lost cattle, from the Nebraska Department of Agriculture, saying cattle losses in Nebraska from the devastating March floods will be much lower than previously reported. And on the bad news side, China continuing to find more cases of African swine fever as that disease continues to spread over the world's largest hog producer. You have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, April the 22nd. Existing home sales for March are due out, and housing industry analysts are not optimistic. The experts forecasting a 2.3% decline in sales of existing homes after February's nearly 12% surge. Also today, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is due out. And on the earnings calendar, Halliburton will release earnings before the open. Whirlpool will follow after the close. W.W. Grainger reports today. TCF Financial and Whirlpool Corporation, among those companies reporting quarterly financial results today. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, Earth Day, April the 22nd.